23rd principle. A free society cannot survive as a republic without a broad program of general education. The English colonists in America undertook something which no nation had ever attempted before, the educating of the whole people. The colonists had a sense of manifest destiny, which led them to believe that they must prepare themselves for a most unique and important role in the unfolding of modern world history. Universal education was therefore considered an indispensable ingredient in this preparation. John Adams describes the beginning of public education. The movement for universal education began in New England. Clear back in 1647, the legislature of Massachusetts passed a law requiring every community of 50 families or households to set up a free public grammar school to teach the fundamentals of reading, writing, ciphering, history, geography, and Bible study. In addition, every township containing 100 families or more was required to set up a secondary school in advanced studies to prepare boys for attendance at Harvard. John Adams stated that this whole program was designed to have knowledge diffused generally through the whole body of the people. He said, quote, "They made an early provision by law that every town consisting of so many families should be always furnished with a grammar school. They made it a crime for such a town to be destitute of a grammar schoolmaster for a few months, and subjected it to heavy penalty, so that the education of all ranks of people was made the care and expense of the public in a manner that I believe has been unknown to any other people, ancient or modern. The consequences of these establishments we see and feel every day. A native of America who cannot read and write is as rare as a comet or an earthquake. It has been observed that we are all of us lawyers, divines, politicians, and philosophers, and I have good authorities to say that all candid foreigners who have passed through this country and conversed freely with all sorts of people here will allow that they have never seen so much knowledge and civility among the common people in any part of the world. Liberty cannot be preserved without a general knowledge among the people. They have a right, an indisputable, unalienable, indefeasible divine right to that most dreaded and envied kind of knowledge. I mean the characters and conduct of their rulers." End of quote. Importance of good local school boards. The success of this educational effort was due largely to the careful selection of highly conscientious people to serve on the school committees in each community and supervise the public schools. Historian John Fisk says these school committees were bodies of great importance. Then he adds, quote, "The term of service of the members is 3 years, one-third being chosen annually. The number of members must therefore be some multiple of 3. The slow change in the membership of the board ensures that a large proportion of the members shall always be familiar with the duties of the place. The school committee must visit all the public schools at least once a month and make a report to the town every year. It is for them to decide what textbooks are to be used. They examine candidates for the position of teacher and issue certificates to those whom they select." End of quote. European and American literacy compared. The unique and remarkable qualities of this program are better appreciated when it is realized that this was an age when illiteracy was the common lot of most people in Europe. John Adams, who spent many years in France, commented on the fact that of the 24 million inhabitants of France, only 500,000 could read and write. In the American colonies, the intention was to have all children taught the fundamentals of reading, writing, and arithmetic, so that they could go on to become well-informed citizens through their own diligent self-study. No doubt this explains why all of the American founders were so well-read, and usually from the same books, even though a number of them had received a very limited formal education. The fundamentals were sufficient to get them started, and thereafter they became remarkably well-informed in a variety of areas through self-learning. This was the pattern followed by both Franklin and Washington. De Tocqueville comments on American education in 1831. Gradually, the zeal for universal education spread from New England to all the other colonies. By 1831, when Alexis de Tocqueville of France visited the United States, he was amazed by the fruits of this effort. He wrote, quote, "The observer who is desirous of forming an opinion on the state of instruction among the Anglo-Americans must consider the same object from two different points of view. If he singles out only the learned, he will be astonished to find how few they are. But if he counts the ignorant, the American people will appear to be the most enlightened in all the world. In New England, every citizen receives the elementary notions of human knowledge. He is taught, moreover, the doctrines and evidences of his religion, the history of his country, and the leading features of its constitution. In the states of Connecticut and Massachusetts, it is extremely rare to find a man imperfectly acquainted with all these things, and a person wholly ignorant of them is a sort of a phenomenon." End of quote. Excursions in the Wilderness. De Tocqueville pointed out that as the visitor advanced toward the west or the south, the instruction of the people diminishes. Nevertheless, he said, there is not a single district in the United States sunk in complete ignorance. De Tocqueville made extensive excursions along the frontier and commented on his observations as follows. Quote, "At the extreme borders of the Confederated States, upon the confines of society and wilderness, a population of bold adventurers have taken up their abode, who pierce the solitudes of the American woods. As soon as the pioneer reaches the place which is to serve him for a retreat, he fells a few trees and builds a log house. Nothing can offer a more miserable aspect than these isolated dwellings. Yet no sort of comparison can be drawn between the pioneer and the dwelling that shelters him. Everything about him is primitive and wild. But he himself, the result of the labor and experience of 18 centuries, he wears the dress and speaks the language of the cities. He is acquainted with the past, curious about the future, and ready for argument about the present. He is, in short, a highly civilized being, who consents for a time to inhabit the backwoods, and who penetrates into the wilds of the New World with the Bible, an axe, and some newspapers. It is difficult to imagine the incredible rapidity with which thought circulates in the midst of these deserts. I do not think that so much intellectual activity exists in the most enlightened and populous districts of France." End of quote. Education includes morality and politics. He then went on to comment concerning the close relationship between the program of universal education and the preservation of freedom. Quote, "It cannot be doubted that in the United States the instruction of the people powerfully contributes to the support of the Democratic Republic, and such must always be the case, I believe, where the instruction which enlightens the understanding is not separated from the moral education. An American should never be led to speak of Europe, for he will then probably display much presumption and very foolish pride. But if you question him respecting his own country, the cloud that dimmed his intelligence will immediately disperse. His language will become as clear and precise as his thoughts. He will inform you what his rights are and by what means he exercises them. He will be able to point out the customs which obtain in the political world. You will find that he is well acquainted with the rules of the administration and that he is familiar with the mechanism of the laws. The American learns to know the laws by participating in the act of legislation, and he takes a lesson in the forms of government from governing. The great work of society is ever going on before his eyes and, as it were, under his hands. In the United States, politics are the end and aim of education. End of quote. Even young children trained in the Constitution. To appreciate the literal reality of the emphasis on politics in early American education, one need only examine the popular textbook on political instruction for children. It was called A Catechism on the Constitution, and it contained both questions and answers concerning the principles of the American political system. It was written by Arthur J. Stansberry and published in 1828. Early Americans knew they were in possession of a unique and valuable invention of political science, and they were determined to promote it on all levels of education. Early Americans educated to speak with eloquence. In 1843, Daniel Webster made a statement which might surprise Americans of our own day. Quote, "And whatever may be said to the contrary, a correct use of the English language is, at this day, more general throughout the United States than it is throughout England herself." End of quote. It was commonplace for many people on the frontier, as well as on the Atlantic seaboard, to speak with a genuine flavor of eloquence. Sermons and orations by men of limited formal education reflected a flourish and style of expression which few Americans could duplicate today. Many of these attributed their abilities to extensive reading of the Bible. Such was the case with Abraham Lincoln. Certainly the classical beauty of the Gettysburg Address and his many other famous expressions cannot be attributed to college training, for he had none. Cultural influence of extensive Bible reading. Not only did the Bible contribute to the linguistic habits of the people, but it provided root strength to their moral standards and behavioral patterns. As Daniel Webster stated, wherever Americans went, the Bible came with them. Then he said, quote, "It is not to be doubted that to the free and universal reading of the Bible, in that age, men were much indebted for right views of civil liberty. The Bible is a book of faith, and a book of doctrine, and a book of morals, and a book of religion, of special revelation from God. But it is also a book which teaches man his own individual responsibility, his own dignity, and his equality with his fellow man." End of quote. In our own day, the public schools have been secularized to the point where no Bible reading is permitted. The founding fathers would have counted this as a serious mistake.